Alice Wong is a researcher in the San Francisco Bay Area. She is the founder of the Disability Visibility Project in partnership with NPR's StoryCorps, which documents the narratives from the disability community. She has also been named a fellow with Making Contact Radio in Oakland. Her parents immigrated from Hong Kong to Indianapolis, where she grew up as pretty much the only Asian American with a disability, at least that she knew of. She expressed that she found her people upon moving to the Bay Area for graduate school. Alice and I joke that while we've never quite met in person, we've bonded over a postmodern pen palship during the past year. I was thrilled to include her story in this first episode of Intersections Radio. Alice joined me on Skype from California.
Hi, my name is Alice Wong, and I am the project coordinator and founder of the Disability Visibility Project, which is a community partnership with StoryCorps. StoryCorps is a national nonprofit that's focused on collecting oral histories of all kinds of people, and our community partnership is a way to encourage people with disabilities to go to StoryCorps, record their stories in the lead up to the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is this coming July. So this project launched last year, and it's been pretty fantastic hearing from people with disabilities all over the country who have really shared their stories with us. And right now we have about 90 stories recorded so far. And I'm just really gratified and really, really humbled at the response. And to me, it's shown that there's a real hunger out there for people to tell their own stories, and that the disability experience is still, you know, in the margins and not really understood. So to me, it's really exciting that we are collecting a lot of stories, and that it's just a slice of life of what Americans with disabilities are like in 2014 to 2015.
Alice then talks about some of the goals she had in mind with the Disability Visibility Project.
When the project winds down this December of this year, I will have access to all the recordings, and I do plan to eventually post short audio clips and text excerpts from each oral history and making them available on our website for anyone to use as an educational or as an advocacy resource, or just, you know, as something to learn about. So that's kind of my future plans for the Disability Visibility Project. And anyone can go to our website right now and take a look at some of the short samples of interviews that we have. It's at disabilityvisibilityproject.com.
One of the interviews Alice conducted at a StoryCorps booth in San Francisco was with Yomi Rong. She's a Black woman with a physical disability, and her experiences with discrimination began in utero.
And I will say that one of the recent interviews that I conducted with Yomi Rong have been one of the most kind of eye-opening and really moving stories. Yomi talks about the story of her birth and how her mother, as a young Black woman, was really pressured to give her up because of her disability at birth. And because of Yomi's disability, which is brittle bone syndrome, also known as osteogenesis imperfecta, during delivery, she broke a number of her bones, and doctors and other professionals immediately assumed that Yomi's mom was a drug user or being abused by her partner. And, you know, there were all these automatic assumptions purely based on race. And, you know, Yomi goes into detail about during her mother's week-long stay in the hospital. Every day, people from the hospital would come in and pressure her to give up her legal rights as a parent, purely due to Yomi's injuries and her disability.
Alice shared the interview with me. Have a listen to this clip of Alice and Yomi.
And then what happened, so this was back in the day when women would spend like a week in the hospital after giving birth. And my mom says every single day that she was in the hospital, doctors and social workers would come to her room and tell her to give me up.
Wow.
They told her that I was more than likely not going to survive, that she had, quote unquote, two normal children at home. My sisters were 3 and 4 years old. And they were pressuring my mom to sign away her rights to me. They told my parents that if by some miracle I lived beyond 3 months, beyond a year, that I would have no speech, that I would have virtually no brain function, that I would be in a vegetative state, that I would never move, that I would never be able to take care of myself, and that I would be a tremendous drain on the family and on them, and that they should leave me there. And explaining to my mother that other families had done this, nobody would look askance at her for doing it. And my mom was just so confused and depressed and scared. And she had, you know, the medical establishment, right, the experts, telling her that there was no way that she could handle this. And leaving the papers there by her bed, and every day, multiple times a day, coming in and saying, you need to sign this paper.
Right.
And my mom said one night, or one day, there was a black nurse who was not my mother's nurse.
Uh-huh.
She had heard about me and heard about my mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm in the NICU, and I'm laying on lamb's wool because that's the only thing soft enough for me to lay on. And so people were looking at me and wondering what's going on. Yeah. I had all these broken bones. And this black nurse snuck into my mom's room and said, you don't have to give up your baby.
Wow. That nurse just intervened out of her.
Intervened and said, I just want you to know, I know that you've been resisting and I think they're wearing you down. And I just want to tell you, you don't have to do this.
She's seen it before.
She must have seen it before.
Yomi's story is an example of all these really complicated layers of race, class, and ableism that, you know, not many people really know about. And I think there are a lot of connections with Yomi's story, even today in 2015. I think there's still a lot of deep kind of skepticism and distrust by communities of color with the medical profession. And this is just one kind of example of the legacy of those kinds of attitudes and the lack of access to services and health disparities by people of color with disabilities. Another part that was really moving and powerful in my mind was when Yomi talked about being a young child and meeting another young black girl who also has the exact same disability, brittle bone syndrome. And she met her in the hospital because, unlike Yomi, her mother gave her up to the state. And basically, this young girl, who is almost similar in background and as Yomi, lived in the hospital. And Yomi talked about seeing her through her hospital bed, which was kind of like a cage because of the tall arm rails. So Yomi was it made a profound impression on her, and it scared her as a young child. And she always wondered what happened to that girl. Her name is Delinda, and you know, this is just something that could happen to a lot of us, where for various reasons, you know, any person who has a disability can have profoundly different outcomes if it wasn't for an intervention or some sort of choices and major decisions. Toward the end of Yomi's story, she did reveal that while she never knew what happened to Linda, she did know that a nurse from the hospital adopted her. So it's interesting how she ends the interview by putting out a message saying, you know, to Linda, wherever you are, I hope that you're really well. And I felt I was in the presence of a real gift that Yomi was open and vulnerable enough to share this very personal and powerful story with me. So these are the kind of stories I really enjoy. It's learning and peeling back the different layers of the lived experience of disability. And I think it's not always, you know, central. We talked about disability itself, but more about how disability informs all of our identities and roles. And, you know, it's exciting to do other interviews with, these are the kind of things that are really exciting, is to highlight the diversity within the disability community, not just by disability, but really about the full spectrum of culture, ethnicity, identity, and place.
Alice was recently named a fellow with Making Contact Radio, a nonprofit organization in Oakland. She describes her intended project about the relationship between home care providers and their employers, people with disabilities.
So due to this past year's experience with StoryCorps and encouraging people to record oral histories, I became more interested in radio as a storytelling format. I applied for a fellowship. I applied for a community storytelling fellowship from a nonprofit called Making Contact Radio. And I decided to create a story about the dynamic between people with disabilities who use personal assistance and those who provide that personal assistance, whether it's a paid home care provider or a family caregiver. And I really want to look at the question, what does interdependence look like? And I think it's something that a lot of people don't really understand or know much about, that both people who work in this workforce as providers of home care, they're dependent on us, people with disabilities, and, you know, people with disabilities are very much tied to people who provide assistance. So, you know, there's vulnerability on both sides, and I think there's something there to really explore. So my goal is to interview either myself and my home care providers who support me, or find somebody to talk about their dynamic as a person with a disability and their home care provider, to really get at the heart of how do these relationships work and what does the dynamic look like.
Alice spoke honestly about the lack of representation even among organizations serving people with disabilities. She expressed her concerns about her own project reaching the diverse experiences within this cultural label of disability.
I do think there needs to be more visibility of disabled people of color. If you look at just, you know, some of the mainstream disability organizations, you know, I sometimes look and I'm mystified by the leadership and staff, and, you know, I always want to see more diversity in terms of race and ethnicity and LGBT and other kinds of identities regarding those who are leading the disability movement and community. I feel like it's still pretty non-diverse, even though I think things are much better than they used to be. But you know, one of the goals of the Disability Visibility Project is really to show that there are all kinds of people with disabilities, whether they and living all different kinds of lives. And it's not just people who are in the movement or people who identify as an advocate or an activist. For me, one thing that, you know, is really concerning is how are we reaching people of color who are disabled, who are not English speakers, who may be monolingual, where English is a second or third language, and that they may come from communities where the term itself, disability, is not really even a term or a concept that not everyone embraces. So to me, you know, I think one of the things that's really needed is to bridge these kind of gaps, you know, and really find out what are the needs and what are the experiences of people who might be immigrants, who are people of color with disabilities, and how do we make sure they're embraced and included into the larger disability community.
I asked Alice about her thoughts on the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and like most people, she felt that we still have miles to go. In these 25 years, most people still need an education about the law and how people with disabilities face discrimination.
I do think there's a lot of great reasons to celebrate the anniversary of the ADA, but yet, at the same time, it's been 25 years, and there's still major disparities in educational outcomes, employment outcomes. I mean, it's still incredibly difficult for people with disabilities to find accessible housing, and it's still a struggle to deal with discrimination in the workplace. Right now, there are people with disabilities who still have to sue to get accommodations such as ASL interpreters at healthcare settings. And, you know, that to me is disappointing that 25 years after the ADA that people still need to sue often just to get the reasonable accommodations that they are entitled to by law. And it's still really disappointing that 25 years after the ADA that people with service animals are still being denied access to restaurants and taxis, and that there's still a lot of physical barriers in public places. And that to me is kind of, you know, a lot of the unfinished business of the ADA. And, you know, hopefully this law will evolve and catch up with the times, especially regarding online access to things such as Netflix and online communications and education and all kinds of services. So while this is a major milestone, I still be really kind of, I'm personally more cautious and more hesitant to bask in this glow of this occasion, but really look ahead and think about all the things that need to be accomplished. I'm just really excited and honored to be included in the inaugural broadcast of Intersections. I think this show is really important and timely because now more than ever we really need to embrace and understand intersectionality in every aspect of life, and that people with disabilities aren't some sort of monolith, and that we come with a whole host of a wide spectrum of experiences and perspectives, and we all come from different places as well. Thank you.
That was Alice Wong from the Disability Visibility Project, and she's a 2015 Making Contact Radio Fellow. You can learn more at disabilityvisibilityproject.com. I'm Sarika Mehta, and you're listening to Intersections Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Just dancing in your community, self of your identity. Some say you were a myth. Elder black disabled man just gone goof. White man took his clothes and dance moves to the stages and courtrooms.